views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Pokornik, host of Vibrant, Powerful Moms. Today, we're going to talk about the difference between discipline and punishment. Lots of people use these two words interchangeably, when in fact they are quite different. But I'm not really concerned about the misuse of the words as much as I want people, parents especially, to clearly understand the difference so that they can make an educated choice about which they want to use. This is an important topic to be aware of because discipline is actually tightly tied to self-discipline. This is what helps you live a healthy life, to treat others in ways you would like to be treated, to respect others' property, to build strong relationships, and so much more. Most of us have been raised using a punitive style. So that is what we have internalized. This means that if we stay on autopilot, we will quite naturally use this style, even when we don't want to. Not just with our kids, but with our friends, colleagues, life partners, and so on. Intuitively, we know that threats, beatings, incarceration do not bring out the best in people, but we aren't always aware of how to do it differently. This robs you of your vibrancy and power because it makes you behave in inconsistent and contradictory ways. This can put you on the defensive, making you dig deep to justify actions that you don't even really believe in, or to shrink inwards and allow feelings like guilt or embarrassment to run the show. And we know we're not at the best when those feelings take over. This topic is relevant to everyone, not just parents. But since my podcast is called Vibrant Powerful Moms, I'm going to look at it mostly from that angle. If you're not currently parenting, and even if you are, think about how this information applies to your life. How were you raised? Can you identify any limiting beliefs you carry as a result? How do you interact now with others? What tools do you use? In other words, whether you're parenting or not, use the information as a way to increase your own awareness in all areas of life. Exactly what are we talking about here? Well, first off, we are not talking about a list of tools. And this is definitely not me telling you what tools you should or shouldn't use. If you spank your child, criticize your spouse, or threaten your friends, that's your choice, even in places where laws prohibit such behavior. It's not up to me to tell you what's good or bad or what you should or shouldn't do. Hopefully by now, if you've listened to some of my other podcasts, you know that that's not how I roll. My goal is to help you understand what you are already doing, why it might not be working, and what you can do differently if you so desire. So please take this information in with this in mind. And allow yourself to really hear it, mull it over, and then if it feels right to do so, integrate it, or at least parts of it, into your unique life and circumstance. Discipline and punishment are less about the tools you use and more about your mindset, intention, and style of delivery. In order to choose discipline as a parenting style, it's important you understand how it is different from the punitive style that's so prevalent in our world. Although parents often ask for it, there is no list of tools that one could define as discipline or punishment tools. the gentlest guiding tool can be manipulated and used to punish someone. On the other hand, I've heard some very convincing stories of punitive tools being used in ways that increased respect and provided good guidance. Let me share a story about discipline gone rogue. When I was working in the school system, we had a trainer come in for a couple days and teach the whole school, as in the staff, how to use a program by Diane Gossin called Restitution. Now, this is not the kind of restitution they talk about in the justice system. This is an actual school program. And it's about helping a person to recognize when they've made a mistake, to take a moment to calm any escalated emotion, and then decide if they'd like to try to fix what they've done. If they choose not to, consequences are put in place. But if they choose to try restitution, there is no other consequence. It's a beautiful discipline tool that allows a student to truly learn from the situation and make amends for it. The trick is they have to choose to do this. You cannot force a person to make amends, just like you can't force a person to feel sorry for what they've done. So one day, shortly after the training, I was walking down the hallway of the school when I heard a teacher bellow at a student, "You are going to do restitution, and you're going to do it right now." This is a perfect example of someone trying to teach discipline using a punitive style. Now, in case you're thinking, well, that teacher should be fired, that teacher was a wonderful person, and the students loved her. She was just really upset by the behavior that she had just witnessed from this student. She had learned a new tool, and she was awkwardly trying to use it. But she was using it based on her internalized punitive model of correction. Most of us fluctuate between using discipline and punishment, just like we switch back and forth between having good and bad moments throughout the day. So let's talk about discipline in the ideal world, okay? And we don't live in the ideal world. But when everything goes right and somebody uses discipline all the time, discipline is about learning and as such is a tool used by adults to guide children towards appropriate behavior. It teaches the child why a behavior is unacceptable and provides them with an opportunity to fix mistakes. It focuses on the behavior as the problem, not the child, which helps the child see how changing his behavior can help him make better decisions in the future. Discipline teaches important life skills like problem solving, being assertive, negotiation, effective communication, and so on, and provides a child with an opportunity to test out different solutions. It is delivered by a calm, controlled adult with the child's best interest at heart. The child does not feel picked on, defective, or embarrassed to have made a mistake, and when all is said and done, feels stronger than when the situation began. This good feeling helps him internalize what he has learned and begins the creation of a moral code that he'll be able to draw on throughout his life. This results in less repeat problem behaviors, even when the adult is not around to enforce things. It also creates a strengthening of the adult-child bond, which is beneficial to relationship and self-worth. All right, so now let's look at punishment. And here we're going to look at punishment in its extreme. Remember, most people kind of waffle back and forth, but this would be a person who uses punishment all the time. Punishment is about teaching a lesson and is geared at making a child so uncomfortable she would never consider offending in this way again. Overreaction by the punisher is common as emotion is often fed by the powerful feeling that accompanies this behavior. As a result, the adult frequently ends up modeling a behavior that contradicts what he or she really wants the child to learn. For punishment to work, the child must believe that the adult has the authority to tell her what to do and the power to follow through on consequences if she does not listen. In this way, most punishment relies on the child fearing a possible outcome, which incidentally is exactly what bullying relies on as well. The child learns that the person with the most power wins, which shifts the focus from learning why a behavior was wrong to craving power. In punishment, the child is often seen as the problem, which diminishes self-esteem and makes it much harder to fix. For example, if a child is told she's lazy and irresponsible and will never amount to anything because she's left her dishes on the coffee table for the umpteenth time, this can feel like a big personal challenge to overcome. She actually has to change who she is rather than just take better care to put her dishes in the dishwasher after eating. Although the child may be given the chance to fix what she has done, she's usually not given a choice about how this should happen or taught how to come up with good solutions for future reference. The emotional delivery of punishment often causes a shift from learning to resentment or revenge aimed at the punisher or the person who turned the offender in. It does not promote responsibility taking, but instead teaches the child how to blame others or how to not get caught. The relationship with the adult suffers with repeat offenses as the severity of punishment tends to escalate over time. If you think for just a moment about our judicial system, you can clearly see how this works. An offense can go from a slap on the hand, like a verbal warning, to the next time it might be a fine or a visit before the justice committee, to a stay in juvenile detention, to prison. And once you're out on parole, there's zero tolerance for even jaywalking. So things have to escalate for punishment to continue to work. So what are some reasons that you might use discipline? The first one is if you want your child to learn how to think rather than what to think. That's Barbara Coloroso who initially made that statement, and it's perfect. You want to teach them how to think. The second bullet, if you want your child or your staff to be able to make good choices even when you're not around, you'll want to use discipline. The third, if you want to improve your own self-discipline and evolve as a person, this is definitely the way to go. The fourth, if you want to see a decrease in bullying behaviors, and by that I'm talking about an overall societal decrease in it. And the final one, if you want to see a marked improvement in our future generations' ability to get along, creatively evolve, and to build strong families, then you'll want to use discipline. You get the idea. Discipline is beneficial to all of us. However, it's also the high road. And the high road is always harder to travel. So let's look at the arguments against discipline. Some parents learn about discipline and decide that it's too soft. There's no way it's going to work on a child like mine. Or, how about this one? My parents used punishment on me and I turned out okay. So, in case any of these thoughts have been surfacing for you, let me address them now. There's nothing soft about discipline. At its core, discipline feels like a push to improve. It provides boundaries and restrictions, limiting freedom and enforcing consequences. It involves correction, possible tears, and moments of heartbreaking follow-through. Your child will not thank you for using discipline, at least not while he's young, and in many cases will complain about being so hard done by. People benefit from discipline because it does not attack them as a person. It teaches important life skills and is based on mutual respect, which is good for relationship. Being firm, clear, and calm are not easy things to do. And believe it or not, your child may still accuse you of yelling, spout words of hate in your direction, and announce to all that you've ruined his life forever. It's also possible that you will try to use discipline and your child will completely ignore you. People forget, though, that this also happens with punishment, depending on the personality of your child and how strongly they feel about whatever it is they are doing. Just think of all those situations where parents have, you know, locked their child in their room only to find out that he escaped through the window. The difference is that with discipline, you have plenty of options for where to go next. Whereas the next level up in punishment can often put you in a very difficult position. Because if you've now locked him in his room and he's escaped through the window, what do you do next? Do you go drag him home? Do you beat him up? I mean, where do you go? I totally understand the desire to go on autopilot as a parent and make your kids listen. It worked for your parents and you turned out okay, right? Well, not really. If it worked for your parents, it's because you feared they really would follow through on whatever the threat was. Don't you make me stop this car. That means that in reality, you were afraid of your parents. Most kids today are being raised not to fear their parents. Confusion about discipline and punishment has actually added to the amount of unruly kids because without fear of consequence, why listen? Fear that you will stop the car and spank them or make them walk home is what makes them listen when you threaten that way. Or maybe even fear that if you do spank them, it will hurt. There's no strap at school anymore, and it probably wasn't there for many of you either, but there was definitely the threat of strap for most of my school years. As a result, many parents and teachers throw out threats based on their upbringing, and the follow-through isn't even a real possibility. Since many of these tools are not a reality for kids today, the threat does not even transpire. So kids learn to call their parents or teachers bluff, weakening the adult's power over them. This kind of thinking even transfers into our work environment. If the threat of firing someone is not really an option because of a union or, you know, the threat of having them work through lunch or whatever, and it's not an option, then that actually weakens our effectiveness everywhere. My point here is that fear-based tools are not effective in an empowered society. And an empowered society, or at least future generations, is really what we're moving towards. Now, you might want to say, okay, so let's stop empowering them. But this is something bigger than us, and it's incredibly important that we do empower people, that we do teach our kids how to think, that we do teach them how to problem solve in a way that's going to work for them. One of the current challenges that I see with all of this is that these fear-based tools have been made irrelevant, yet parents are not being given new effective ideas for working without them. It's really hard to do a great job when you've been given broken tools to build with. So my goal is to start by helping you become aware of the difference between discipline and punishment. And once you really fully understand that, you will be able to adapt your tools, your thinking, your upbringing in order to help you raise kids the way you want to raise them. So discipline is about being disciplined. If you want your kids to get it, you must practice it yourself. If you don't, you'll model contradiction, hypocrisy, and or even bullying behaviors. So let me give you some guidelines for using discipline. I call these the four BCs. The first BC, be calm. Barbara Coloroso says, an out-of-control child needs an in-control adult. And I agree with her 100%. Know your own triggers, the things that set you off, and learn how to protect your button so you're not losing it with your kids. Calmness is a way of modeling self-control, and we all want our kids to have that. I was listening to an interview just the other day with Tony Robbins and Marie Forleo, and he was talking about how in their house, they have, him and his wife, they have four kids, and they have the 90-second rule. And that 90-second rule is put in place for when they are losing it. When anybody's really upset and behaving badly or doing whatever, they take 90 seconds. It's all they need because they've been trained in it. And they're able to calm themselves down, to breathe into their heart, to think about what it is that they appreciate about the other person or what they're learning in that moment. And that's all it takes to change the conversation from one of screaming at each other to one of really coming to a place of understanding each other. Some tricks that you might try for staying calm: pretend that someone you admire is standing there watching you. It's amazing how we'll change our behavior when someone we like and respect and admire is watching us. Another trick is to focus on the bottom of your feet. that shifts your attention from anger to the bottom of your feet. Notice them on the floor, really move back and forth, and that can be enough to take you out of that escalated anger. Another option is to think ahead of what you're trying to teach and how you will react if your child won't listen. There's a lot to be said for thinking about things in advance and knowing what you can do if something goes wrong. A final option is to somehow alter your state to stop the pattern from what normally would happen. And a simple way to do that is to say something funny. Notice something funny. True laughter will alter your state immediately and stop you from going over that anger cliff. The second BC is to be clear. You have expectations for your kids, so why not share them? The clearer you become about what you expect from others, the easier it will be for you to explain them and enforce them consistently. The clearer you are with others, the easier it is for them to accommodate your expectations or explain their side of why they cannot. This idea can also help you identify any unfair expectations you might have and perhaps let go of some of them. Because boy, oh boy, we have a lot of beliefs that we carry from our youth that really aren't relevant anymore. So ideas for being clear, set boundaries and rules that you can come up with good reasons for having. This will make them easier to enforce and much more likely to be respected. When beliefs, rules, or expectations come up that you aren't sure about, gently challenge them by asking what-if questions. For example, what if I didn't enforce daily baths? What would happen? Could I live with that? Why or why not? The third BC, be consistent. Once a rule has been put in place and you have shared it with your family or staff or whoever, enforce it. If it was important enough to put out as a rule, it must be important enough to follow through. Now remember, if you suddenly realize that's a silly rule, this doesn't make sense, be a big enough person to be able to say, no, we're not doing that anymore. But otherwise, if the rule is in place, enforce it. When you don't enforce your rules, you create confusion and a strong desire to test all future rules. If you think about it, when you're driving down a highway and you're going over the speed limit and you pass by a cop, if that cop doesn't do anything, doesn't pull you over, what's going to happen? You're probably going to speed on that highway all the time because obviously you can do it and get away with it. Or even more frustrating is when other people are sailing past you, you're going right at the limit and they are obviously going way over and the cops don't pull them over either. This can be a big problem in the workplace where the people who are following the rules notice that you're not enforcing it for those who aren't, and this actually creates resentment. They get angry at you for not enforcing those rules. So when you're dealing with your kids, an example of rule-breaking questions could be things like, so what's our rule about coming straight home after school? Why is that rule in place? What happened today? What is our consequence for breaking the rule? Or what do you think you can do to make up for the worry your disappearance caused? Something that you really want to keep in mind, don't ask these questions when you're emotionally upset. So if your child was an hour late, and so now you're really upset, you were worried that whole time, they walk in the door, it would be fine for you to say to them, I am so happy that you are home safe. But I'm very upset right now, and I need to take some time before I can even talk to you about how we're going to deal with this. Then off you go. And you know what? That time where your child has to wait to see how you're going to react is actually a bit of a consequence on its own, because it's really hard when you don't know what's going to happen. Now you can come back 15 minutes later and have that conversation. And maybe you find out that your child was late because he helped somebody who was being bullied and then walked them home. You don't know what the situation is, and getting mad and exploding all over them isn't going to help you at all. Something that you should know about this is being consistent will always be easiest to do when you come up with fair consequences in advance. So if there's something that you know is going to be hard for your child to listen to, then you want to come up with some consequences beforehand so that you don't start dealing them out in anger. The final BC is to be caring. Nothing will make discipline more effective than having a strong, positive relationship with the other person. If your child likes you, she's much less likely to intentionally be disrespectful. So make frequent deposits into your relationship. Love unconditionally. Look for opportunities to spend quality time with your child and be aware of what you are modeling. How you talk to your kids and how you react to what they're telling you will make a big difference to how much they listen and how much they share. Some quick tips for being caring. Always give the benefit of the doubt. Remember that innocent until proven guilty? That's really important for trust. Correct in a firm yet friendly voice. Respect is also a big part of this, so really pay attention to your voice. And finally, be aware of the message your language is sending. It also doesn't hurt to let your child know you love them no matter what they have done. When you practice the four BCs in your relationship, especially as a parent, you'll notice how your relationships improve. This will help you choose future discipline strategies because it allows you to see and understand the other person better. The four BCs also require you to use your self-discipline. Although they sound quite easy, they're not, especially when things aren't going the way you would like them to go. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.